Welcome to The Jump. I'm Cassidy Hubbard, and we have a lot of news to cover across the association, with training camps opening in less than a week. The Wolves dismissed their team president yesterday. How will this decision impact their chase for Ben Simmons? Warriors owner Joe Lacob was fined $50,000 for his comments on Simmons. Was this justified? And reports indicate Zion Williamson has been unhappy with the Pelicans for a while. Will he remain in NOLA long term? Plus, Vince Carter talks us through his top below-the-rim plays, and it's all amazing. Tell a friend to tell a friend. The Jump starts now. And we'll have eight-time All-Star Vince Carter and our senior writer Zach Lowe on shortly. But first, I'd like to bring in our NBA insider Nick Friedel, who covers the Warriors for us. And Nick, you released a story confirming a San Francisco Chronicle report that Andrew Wiggins is still not vaccinated. And as of August 20th, the city of San Francisco has required proof of vaccination for large indoor events, which means his vaccination status could affect his playing status. So I ask you, how are the Warriors dealing with this internally with training camp next week?
Cass, this has been a headache for the organization throughout the summer, frankly, and talking to people even in the last few weeks. The conversations are ongoing with Wiggins from different members of the organization, trying to discuss his hesitancy, trying to get him to take the vaccine. Now, as the Chronicle noted in its initial report, there's still a chance that Wiggins may be given a religious exemption, but the Warriors aren't sure on that right now. And the hope still exists, certainly, that he will end up getting the vaccine and all will be well. But it has put into a lot of stress and a lot of things in flux as the Warriors try to prepare for what they hope is a season that vaults them back to the top of the West.
So if he doesn't get that religious exemption, what are the ramifications of this if Wiggins is not vaccinated before training camp? And mind you, usually it takes 2 weeks before the vaccination is in your system.
It certainly puts his status for those training camp practices in question, Cass. And the key, as the Warriors are looking at it, and as people around the league are looking at the situation, a lot of it for Andrew Wiggins right now boils down to money. I mean, if he is willing to take the stance that he just does not want to take the vaccine and he doesn't get that exemption, then he's putting in peril a couple hundred thousand dollars a game and obviously multi-million dollars after that. So again, the Warriors are hopeful that in the end, he will get the vaccine, all will be well going into the season, but nobody knows for sure exactly when that time would come for him.
Yeah, and according to that report, he said he wouldn't get the vaccine unless he was forced to, and determine what forced means. So we will see. The front office will continue to deal with that. Meanwhile, Warriors owner Joe Lacob has been fined $50,000 for his comments on Ben Simmons, basically saying that he wouldn't fit their roster. What's been the reaction to this whole ordeal around this team?
Cass, you and I have talked to Joe many times through the years and through the organization. Everybody's kind of going, oh, that's Joe. He's going to speak his mind. He feels very confident in what he has to say. He has always been outspoken. The question internally has been, will this fine make him be a little less active in how sometimes he speaks to the media? But this is a very passionate guy. This is a very proud guy. And frankly, he said what a lot of people inside the organization are wondering. Simmons has backers inside that organization, but there are other people inside the organization are going, would this really work? Especially with the guy who struggles late in games, and especially with Draymond already on the roster. So he just brought to light what the conversation is ongoing behind the scenes.
Yeah, and the fine aside for tampering, maybe he settled some noise that could possibly be entering that locker room with the rumor swirling around Ben Simmons. So make sure to check out Nick's coverage of the Warriors all season long on ESPN.com. Always great talking to you, my friend. All right, let's stay with the Warriors and unpack more with Zach Lowe and Vince Carter. And starting with you, Vince, how should the Warriors handle this situation with Andrew Wiggins?
Cassidy, I tell you, this ties their hands because you talk about a 19-point score, 38% shooting. He had an unbelievable season. And he's a great piece. He's an important piece to their team. He played well, and he gives a lot to them defensively as well. So now you rely on him for 41 games a season if he's healthy. Remember, if he's not healthy, not only can you not play at home, you're not healthy to play on the road when they need you as well. So I think he puts them in a situation where what's important to the organization and what's important to him. And you have to make the decision. And when the Warriors make a decision, he's going to have to live with the decision that's made. You know, and I get it. It's his preference, and I understand. But, you know, with all of that being said, he has to understand if he continues to do this, he's putting a lot of guys at risk. So if they say, if they remove you or ask you to stay away or trade you, that's just what it is. And he's going to have to live with it.
Two stats we haven't mentioned on Wiggins yet are games played and minutes played. He is an Iron Man. He plays a lot of minutes, and he plays every game. And for a team with a lot of kind of reclamation projects at the end of their bench, a lot of rookies and young guys at the end of their bench, even if you just think he's an average NBA player or slightly above average, filling that many minutes over that many games while Klay Thompson recovers with an average or above average player is a huge deal for the Warriors. They need Andrew Wiggins. As for what they should do, as Nick said, they've done a full court organizational press to try to convince him to get vaccinated. That has not worked so far. Nick mentioned the possibility of him being fined game checks. I think that's still to be negotiated with the league, with the players union and the teams. I don't think anyone really knows exactly how that will unfold. Do they take whole game checks? Is there something to be negotiated in the health and safety protocols? And the last thing I'll say is this. Right now, this is a Knicks, Nets, Warriors problem because of local ordinances in New York and San Francisco. And I can tell you the LA teams are waiting and watching to see if Los Angeles adopts a similar kind of ordinance that would affect Lakers and Clippers players. So we have not heard the end of this stuff yet.
Yeah, to your point. Certainly. Go ahead, Vince.
I want to say, and I agree with you, that he is extremely important, particularly in the beginning of the season, because Klay not being there and he had a great year. They want to hit the ground running, and he is an important part to that on both ends of the floor.
It is a situation to monitor in San Francisco, also New York, as you said, Zach, as Sean Marks revealed this week, a few of his Nets players are unvaccinated, and, you know, New York has a similar mandate. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, the Timberwolves shocked the basketball world yesterday when they parted ways with president of basketball operations Gersan Rosas. Sachin Gupta, the Timberwolves EVP of basketball operations, is promoted to interim head of basketball operations. Now, sources also told ESPN that new owners Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez sped up their decision to relieve Rosas of his duties once they learned more about the deterioration of his relationship with Gupta and received evidence about an inappropriate relationship between Rosas and another team employee. So, Zach, this is a big change during a pivotal time, not to mention the Wolves have repeatedly been rumored as players in the Ben Simmons sweepstakes. So how does this impact that process?
I think it's too early to say because we don't know how long Sachin Gupta is going to have the top job. We don't know who the candidates are going to be. We almost like kind of don't know even who owns the team and who's making the decisions. Glenn Taylor still owns the team, but he's made a deal to sell it to Mark Lohr and A-Rod. Like, the Wolves can just never, ever do anything normally. And leave Simmons aside for a second. I don't really think it impacts their pursuit or non-pursuit or whatever of Ben Simmons yet. I think this is an organization that, frankly, is just reeling from drama and chaos, and they need to just, like, priority number one isn't what do we do with Ben Simmons. Priority number one needs to be how do we just stabilize our organization? How do we create an environment where, forget the guy who's not here, who's in Philadelphia, that's Ben Simmons. Do we create an environment where Karl Anthony Towns wants to be here, where Anthony Edwards wants to be here? Because this is just over and over and over again with the Timberwolves. They just need to get their internal stuff right before we start talking about trade stuff.
And to piggyback, I agree with you 100%. That's the first and foremost. I think, you know, with all the time, you want to be in the news for something good. It was surprising, and I was like, wait, what? The timing. But at the same time, when it comes to Ben Simmons, you know, let's just say that usually the GM is the guy making the call. So I can see if that conversation was happening with Gersan. Gersan now is all of a sudden, now it's kind of like, all right, well, now who's going to kind of, you know, make this happen or work out that deal? But 1,000%, the Timberwolves need to get everything what they can control, and that's internally and making sure their young talent is ready to go and happy.
Yeah, and a note to just remember, Zach, you know, Gerson had a relationship, obviously, with Daryl Morey after working with him in Houston. So, you know, not sure if it causes a delay, if there are conversations there. But to your point, us seeing Kat tweet out WTF when this news broke, he's your franchise player. You're looking for some stability heading into the season, and you know, maybe they'll find it after these moves. But yesterday certainly was a shock. Moving on, though, to some significant news before we go to break. And that's Tamika Trimaglio, a prominent Washington, D.C. attorney and longtime consultant for the Players Association, has been hired as the new executive director of the NBAPA. Trimaglio will replace Michelle Roberts, the first woman to run a major professional sports league union. And new NBAPA president C.J. McCollum reacted to the news on Twitter, saying, "Welcome to the family." Welcome indeed to Tamika. Coming up on The Jump, we're counting down Vince Carter's best below the rim finishes, and the player watching didn't even make the cut. Wait till you see what did. So J. Cole continues to make his basketball rounds. Yesterday, he practiced with the Orlando Magic. Vince, have any desire to hoop with Cole?
I've never played with him. I definitely would play. Well, I don't play ball anymore. First of all, let's just start there. That's over with. But no more. It's over with. But let me tell you, I admire him, and he's smart. Make his rounds playing ball, because hey, you might get a call to get into training camp. And you know, I've experienced, as you see, Master P here was my teammate in training camp and preseason. But you know, basketball players want to be rappers, and rappers want to be basketball players. We've seen it before, and it's great for him. And he's a guy that is accepted into the basketball world because he can play.
You don't play basketball at all? When was the last time you got on the court?
When I was in studio.
Why do I feel like my heart just broke a little?
I'm sorry.
He's on the golf course now. That's how he's spending his
time.
There you go. I'm not mad at you. That's a retirement life.
Golf, baby.
I mean, you've seen the dunks, half man, half amazing. But what about Vince's best below the rim finishes? Let's count down his top five with the man himself. And you know these dunks are great when the man himself is also grunting, making noises, because those are just ridiculous. Cue the music. It's time to run it back. Number five, the year 2000, hangs in the air for the smooth finish.
Well, I at that point, I just knew I guess I could have dunked that.
No.
Just give him a different look.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I knew he was gonna. That's back in the day when they would run you down and knock you over. So that was just a safe play.
Give people options. How about number four? 2002, insane reverse in Phoenix.
There again, you know, when you drive, still you're talking about early 2000s. Guys knocking you out of the air. That's some protection. You know, getting under the rim, using the rim as your protection, and knowing you can finish on the other side.
Protection and athleticism. How about 06 baseline 360?
You see Big Curry down there, so I was like, well,
yes.
Euro step was not in my game back in 2004 to 2009. So it was like either up, over, or go around you.
Yeah, but every single year you improved. 03, absurd hang time in Miami. Come
There's
on
There's another
now.
Situation where I jumped too far in the box. And you see right here, I jumped too far. I was like, oh, big fella Jamal McGlure, I think, was going to block it. So I was like, well, let's see how long I can hang. And if I can make it to the other side, and that's why the square is there. Get the ball on the square.
So this is our top one, 2005.
This is one of my favorites.
Is it one of your favorites?
This is one of my favorites.
Okay.
Yes. Below the rim, this is one of my favorites for sure. You know, anytime you play in Staples, and you know, it's always glitz and glamour, and you want to put on the show. And, you know, Caron Butler was up into me, and I beat him in 360 layup, and there you have it.
When did you not put it on a show? I mean, we could fill up the whole show with your highlights, VC. But look.
Yeah, but below the rim, it gets no better than that.
Sure. I mean, everything. Below, above, you did
above,
it all, my
whatever
friend.
Whatever you need.
But look, it's a pretty busy September news day. So I just want to pivot to a story out of Dallas. We'll get back to you in just a second. As Mavs Director of Quantitative Research and Development, Bob Vulgaris, is out after his contract expired. He confirmed the news on Twitter. Quote, "I haven't commented since the season ended. Just for clarification, I asked to be let out of my contract, was denied. Since then, I have been waiting for my contract to expire." He continued, "Grateful for the experience, learned a lot, and got the chance to work with some great people." Now joining us for more on this story is our insider, Tim McMahon from Dallas. And Tim, Valgaris was previously reported as someone who was highly regarded by Mavs owner Mark Cuban. Was this departure at all a surprise?
No, I mean, we've known for months that Bob Valgaris was not going to be back with the Mavericks. And once he kind of became part of this soap opera, he didn't have any interest in that. The new regime didn't have any interest in that. And, you know, really, it's unfortunate for the Mavericks and for Mark Cuban, because Cuban really valued Bob Valgaris's data, the information that he provided. But just the way things were handled, you know, I was told it was kind of a Game of Thrones type of atmosphere behind the scenes with the Mavericks. And it just wasn't in the best interest of anybody for him to be part of that.
And you mentioned the soap opera. It was also reported in the past that Luka Doncic and Valgaris didn't really have the greatest relationship. Does this move today help the Mavericks keep their superstar happy in any way?
I think a $206 million Supermax contract extension probably helps that. And look, if we're being straight up, Rick Carlisle's departure, I think, is a much bigger deal in terms of Luka Doncic's day-to-day disposition than the, essentially the head of analytics. Luka yells at everybody, as one Maverick source put it to me. Valgaris got a little bit of that, but Rick Carlisle got much more.
Yeah, and also at the refs, as we saw him, high up there in the text this year. But as you said, Jason Kidd in now as head coach. A lot of changes in Dallas this season, and Tim will have you covered through it all on ESPN.com. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
All right, coming up on The Jump, what's going on with Zion and the Pelicans? Because all is not well. We talk about his future with the franchise after the break, so keep it locked right here on The Jump. Saturday night from T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. It's UFC 266 with a stacked card. The prelims are on ESPN News, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN Plus, starting at 8 Eastern, followed by the main card on pay-per-view. To order in English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Cassidy Albert, joined by Vince Carter and Zach Lowe. And guys, let's get to some spicy news out of the Big Easy. According to Christian Clark of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, Zion has been unhappy with the Pelicans organization since his rookie season, when a return from injury timeline initially listed at 6 to 8 weeks became 3 months before he played in his first game. The article also states that there's a rift between Zion and Pelicans EVP David Griffin, noting that they communicate infrequently. Zion is eligible for a rookie extension after this coming season. So, Vince, after hearing these reports, do you see Zion sticking with the Pelicans organization long term?
I think it's a lot that needs to happen. It depends on, you know, how the season goes. I think they need to have a discussion coming into the season now. And get it all on the table, and they can go from there, because they don't want a situation like a Ben Simmons to happen where he's not coming back. I refuse to play there anymore, because he's a great piece to the puzzle and to the city of New Orleans. So I think that's first and foremost. And from there, we got to think back. You know, the organization has had their issues with him as far as weight, you know, keeping him healthy, effort, you know, working on his game, and so on and so forth. So it kind of goes both ways in that situation. So I think a seat at the table where they're putting it all on the table, understanding, discussing, you know, likes and dislikes, then you can kind of move on from there, because the city is behind him and this team. And to walk away from that, you know, he should think about it. So I think a conversation needs to happen.
Zach? Oh, I don't think we have...
Between the team.
There we go. We didn't have your mic for a second, but now.
The return to play stuff definitely created some tension between Zion, or Zion's orbit anyway, and the team. But that's old news. That's 2 years ago. And by the way, Vince is right. He hasn't always been in peak shape. He's one of the most unique body types in the history of the NBA. The Pelicans are within their rights to say, hey, we're rebuilding. We're not going to play you 82 games. We're going to try to protect you from injury. But I don't think it's too early here to sound some alarm bells. I think rift may be a little too strong between David Griffin and Zion, but I don't think they're seeing super eye to eye. He is the best candidate in the history of the NBA to take the one-year qualifying offer instead of signing his extension. And as we've seen with Ben Simmons and so many other players, even if he signs his extension, he can still demand to be traded or request to be traded. And by the way, this is going to be, Willie Green is going to be his third head coach in three seasons in New Orleans, right? So they need to get some inner stability. And like Vince said, if they're not good this season, if they disappoint this season, this is going to become an issue that doesn't go away. They have to have a good season.
And how do you have a good season? Now, obviously, Zion put up great numbers last year, but there was a lot of confusion. He was pushing to be the point forward. Should he be a point forward? What direction, Vince, should Willie Green go with Zion this season to not only get the best out of him, but to help build this team towards, you know, long-term success?
Well, I'm going to say this. I think Stan Van Gundy brought something out of Zion at the point forward. They found something there, and I think Stan utilized something and was able to open the floor up that way. But you got to utilize his athleticism. I think open the floor up, got to bring some shooting in. That's important. You know, you need some knockdown shooters to give him some room to work because he doesn't shoot the ball well. So they're going to load. And how do you create an open space? Put shooters around him to be able to be athletic, to be powerful, to be strong. So that's number one, I think, an issue that really needs some work in an area that of concern, in my opinion, is they need shooting to open that floor.
The Pelicans' offense is going to be awesome. Zion is a ridiculous specimen. He lives in the paint. He's Shaq, but a little smaller. He's basically the greatest paint scorer in the modern history of the league since Shaq already. Devontae Graham's going to open up the floor. Their offense is going to be fine. You want to win games? Your defense can't stink. Your transition defense can't stink. That's the end of the floor that cost the Pelicans last year. It was part of the reason they lost so many close games late. They need to clean up their defense. If they can get close to average on defense, I think that's like maybe optimistic. If they're 25th and worse, that's a problem. If they're 18th, 19th, they got a chance to get into the playoff race. That's the end of the floor that they got to clean up more. The offense is going to be fine.
I agree with that, but I'm sorry to cut you off. I agree, but at the same time, okay, defensively, yes, but offensively, you know, they put the ball in there. If you're going to take the ball out of his hands and you're going to put him in the post, all you're going to do now is load. So you need to make sure, I think it's important, you need to make sure they're shooting. They're shooting because when that floor, you shrink the floor, you know, young guys, they tend to make bad decisions. You tend to enforce things, and he's already unhappy. So you want to open the floor where he can just play freely. And I think that's important offensively. You know, we're in a league now where guys feel good when they're going offensively. Yes, as a coach, yes, defensively, you always talk about that. And you're right. Defensively, they need guys to, you know, they need help on the back end. And it just need the effort from their young guys.
And they got to figure it out in a hurry because after losing Anthony Davis, losing Zion Williamson would be just devastation that I can't even, you know, comprehend at this point for the Pelicans. Speaking of drama, we've been covering the Sixers saga all week, but let's take a Vegas angle on the situation. The win total comes courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook. Philly is listed at 50.5 wins for the season right now. With the uncertainty around Ben Simmons, Vince, would you go over or under on that total?
With Ben Simmons, I say they can hit that number for sure. I think regardless of, you know, the riff and Ben Simmons and Joel not getting along or whatnot, and all of the surrounding, when they play basketball, they're going to play basketball if Ben Simmons is around. If not, I don't think they can make it. Obviously, there's a lot that depends on what they get from Ben Simmons, if he's not there at all and they don't get anything. I think they just miss that number if there's no Ben Simmons.
You could quintuple my salary, and I'm not betting anything over under on this team until we know what the heck is going to happen with Ben Simmons. But if you're asking me what I would do if I were a betting man, I would hit the under here because I just don't know. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? What are they going to trade him for? Are they going to trade him for rebuilding assets that don't necessarily help the team now, but that they might flip for another star player there? I don't know. I do know that Joel Embiid, the other 10-pole star player, typically is going to miss 15, 20 games at a minimum for injury, rest, maintenance, whatever. And I'm not optimistic about those other 20 games if Ben Simmons isn't there. So 50.5, that's a high line in an Eastern Conference that is beefed up from top to bottom, so I'm taking the under.
Wait, just quickly, Zach, I listened to the Low Post, a great podcast you had with Bobby Marks recently. You talked about how you had the Celtics in that three spot in the East. Where do you have the Sixers finishing in the East?
A big fat, who the heck knows? I'm not penning in Boston third. I think Boston has a much better shot. I think Boston has a much better shot for third than people are giving them credit for. Miami's there. Atlanta's there. It wouldn't surprise me if Philly finished fifth or sixth. I mean, we just don't know. The East, all those teams that I just mentioned are vying for that third spot, which means someone's getting sixth, which means someone that we don't expect to be at risk for the play-in tournament is going to be at risk for the play-in tournament. It could be Philadelphia.
Oh, man. And the question of whether or not this team can get off to a good start amid the chaos will factor into the saga as well. So that's happening on the East Coast. Coming up, Frank Vogel says he doesn't care for the narrative that the Lakers are too old. How should he manage the task of keeping this, let's say, experienced roster intact through an 82-game season? That and more next on The Jump.
Winning a championship is every athlete's ultimate goal.
The Houston Comets are the first ever champions of the WNBA.
Every WNBA team that has won a championship knows it was hard, and that's what makes it feel good.
The Seattle Storm, WNBA champions! Waiting all my life for this place
and this time. Nice for the champions! Yeah! This is what we work hard for all year.
This is the WNBA playoffs.
And that had me bopping. Welcome back to The Jump. First round of the WNBA playoffs start this evening. I know our Monica McNutt is fired up. Joins us now. You got the bop going.
I'm so ready, Cass.
Okay, before we get into previewing tonight, let's run it back to the top three plays in the WNBA first round history. Back in 2019, Jordan Canada with the excuse me.
Change of speed, change of direction, Cass. Look out below. And I love the way Canada's game has grown over the course of her time in the league. Shout out to UCLA, the young Bruin.
And she just said bye-bye. 2018, Diana Taurasi with the no-look dime.
The no-look, of course, to Dawana Bronner, who's also having a tremendous season. Now, even though these two aren't a duo, I'm excited to watching both of them in their pursuit this year.
Last year, Shea Petty with the buzzer-beating three to eliminate the Mystics. How about the team that cut her mid-season?
This was killer, and that storyline, Cass, was a huge part of it. Now, she's done this again this year. Not quite a buzzer beater, but the headline following her terrific performance was Petty Larceny, which I
love. Ah, I love that, too. All right. I mean, I got goosebumps and everything, so let's get to it, Monica. Two elimination games tonight. Let's start with Shea Petty's Mercury taking on the Liberty. Phoenix is a 10-point favorite, though Diana Taurasi is listed as questionable. What do the Liberty need to do to pull off the upset?
They got to shoot to get hot and shoot to stay hot. Their signature all season long, Cass, has been what they do from behind the three-point line. And if they can shoot the ball well from behind the arc, it will force Brittany Griner and Breonna Turner to come out of the paint, and then it will create some lanes for the dynamic two-man game that we've seen all season, led by Benajah Laney, run alongside Sabrina Ionescu. Listen, Laney has been fantastic this year. She comes off of a Most Improved award. She was a piece that this Liberty squad really wanted in terms of taking their team to the next level. And yes, for them to lock up this seed, some things did have to bounce their way with losses to the Sparks and the Mystics, but they're here now. And I just love this young squad with nothing to lose. On the flip side, you've got veterans. It is high time for Skylar Diggins-Smith and Brittany Griner to go ahead and start making their hay in the postseason. And of course, Diana Taurasi, who's a little bit questionable with that ankle injury. I imagine that we'll probably see her, because I don't see Diana Taurasi not trying to get after it in terms of this championship run.
Look, Liberty have a tall task, literally, with Brittany Griner just dunking all over the place this season. Meanwhile, in the 6-7 matchup, Candace Parker Sky hosts the Dallas Wings. Here's Candace today on her preparation for a potential elimination game tonight.
The preparation comes in knowing that you've prepared and you've done everything leading up to that point. And, you know, I think when you try to reinvent the wheel going into a game, that's when you're not yourself. So I just try to continue to build on what I've done this season. Mentally, it's just controlling the things you can control. I think I'm at my best when I'm rebounding. So I'm going to try to control that and just my activity as well.
All right, Monica, what are your biggest keys to this game?
Well, it's exactly what CP, as in Candace Parker, said right there, Cass. Rebounding is huge for the Chicago Sky squad. They are top three in the league in that category, where the Wings are actually one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. So there's a 10 rebound differential. That, to me, translates to second chance opportunities in which the Sky absolutely have to capitalize. This Wing squad, what's the song everybody loves on TikTok right now? Get into it. Yeah, they are ready to get into it, Cass. Okay, yes. Arike Ogunbowale, mm-hmm. Marina Mabry, the combo creates Marike. You've got gold medal leash, Alicia Gray, who's playing terrific coming off of that 3-on-3 gold medal that she won. They're a young squad that no one, I sort of did, just to pat myself on the shoulder, expected to be here. And so they are absolutely playing with house money and salivating at the opportunity to knock off a team that a lot of people look at the roster on paper thought should be a favorite to contend for a title in the WNBA this year.
Well, let's get you to try to pat yourself on the back tomorrow. So give us your predictions. Who do you got tonight?
Oh, Cass. Oh, you know, technically I'm supposed to be neutral, but here's what I got. I think the veterans show up big time, and I think the teams that are at home have the advantage. Listen, the Liberty is a wonderful story, but the Phoenix Mercury, there's pressure, and pressure mm-hmm. either makes diamonds or busts pipes, and I think in the case of the Mercury, it's going to make some diamonds. And then you look at Chicago. To me, 2 years now, we've been talking about what they got going on in Chicago in the Sky. They were victims to the De'Arica Hamby half-court shot that eliminated their hopes, and then a season ago, they couldn't get healthy in the bubble. You add Candace Parker in her hometown with a sense of urgency, I think the Sky I prepare for the moment.
Whew. I mean, you were ready for that, even though you said you
I'm
didn't
so
want
ready.
Again, Wings, the Sky, 8 Eastern, Liberty, and Mercury, 10 Eastern on ESPN2. You can check out Monica in studio all night, including before the game at 7 Eastern on Hoopstreams. Enjoy the games tonight, Monica.
Thanks, Cass. I can't wait.
All right, back to the NBA. The Lakers could have one of the most experienced teams in NBA history with five players at least 35 years old. And Coach Frank Vogel is just tired of being told this team is old, telling the Lake Show podcast, quote, "We have great players on our team. Yes, some of them are towards the end of their career, but they're still producing at a high level. And if you're still producing at a high level, it doesn't matter how old you are. So I don't really care for the narrative." As we welcome back Vince and Zach. Vince, we're going to start with you. Played longer than anybody
ever.
I'd love
to hear it.
You agree with Vogel's reaction?
Oh, I love to hear it because I've been saying this for a lot of years. I say we don't look at the years. We look at the player. You look at what is your eyes telling you? Your eyes telling you that player can produce. Not because of their age, because they can get it done regardless of their age. And that's, you know... It just makes me feel good. It just warmed my heart just hearing that because, you know, it's been the thing. And I get it. You know, you have a lot of young guys, and that's the way the league is. I walked into the NBA many, many years ago when there was two or three young guys and all were veterans. And you had, you know, you had to figure out. But a coach walked in, and it was understood. And that's what Frank Vogel walks into. He walks into a training camp now, and guys understand how to play. They understand how to take care of their body. They know what to expect, how the league is run. You know, maybe you don't play in big minutes. You know, I know this the load management thing. You don't play big minutes, but you can. You know now if you don't play LeBron as many minutes, you can put in Bazemore. You can put in Ariza and know that these guys know how to play and won't let you down and come to play each and every night and they will take care of their body. And that's important. You know, a lot of these other teams, I mean, just look at this. Look at all the guys. You have Rondo. You have Howard. You have Wayne Ellington. You have guys that understand how to play and understand how to take care of the body. So maybe they don't play big minutes or don't play at all. But Coach Vogel does not have to worry about these guys not taking care of themselves and being prepared.
Zach, are the Lakers old?
Boy.
Oh, yes, they're old.
I didn't say that.
They are old. But, yes.
I was going to say, I hate that word narrative that Frank used. I hate that word because it's not a narrative. It's just a thing. The Lakers are old. Right. They're just old. And Vince hit on a very interesting issue. LeBron is second all-time in minutes played, regular season and playoffs. To me, one of the interesting subplots of this season is this the year a team finally convinces LeBron, hey, I know you want to play all 82. I know you care about the fans. I know you care about MVP. Let's dial it back. You've been injured two of the last 3 years. You're number two all-time in minutes. Play 65 games. Play 31 minutes a game. Let's get ready for June, May, the playoffs, when it really matters. And the other point is, not all the Lakers are old. That's why I'm especially interested in some of the young guys that are here. Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn, and especially one of the most interesting players in the league this season, just 20 years old, Talen Horton Tucker. Because if he can make enough shots, he has a 7-1 wingspan. He's got a chance to be one of those two-way guys that always thrive around LeBron. So keep an eye on him.
And we'll see, you know, if LeBron decides to dial back during the season. But he's starting to ramp it up as The Athletic reports that James will host a three-day mini training camp, starting this weekend in Las Vegas. This is a similar chemistry-building function to the one hosted before the 2020 title season. This year's Lakers team returns only LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Talen Horton Tucker from last year's team. So, Zach, how important will this be in terms of building team camaraderie with all these new faces?
Well, this is where the age and experience thing might come in, because all of these guys, all the guys that are 30 plus, are here for one reason, and that's to chase a ring. They've all been on lots of teams. They know how to build chemistry. They know who they are in the locker room. So I don't think this team is going to struggle at all to build sort of even on-court chemistry, even though all the team is brand new other than the three or four guys you mentioned. I think chemistry is going to be fine. These guys will ease right into it. They know how to do this. That is one of the benefits of, let's say, being an experienced team.
Vince, did you ever host pre-camp camps with teammates?
Yeah, I've definitely been a part of these, and I think they're extremely important. And, Cassie, you said one thing that is why this mini camp is happening, hitting the ground running day one. They want to win as many games. So, like, to Zach, to your point, to rest and get ready for the playoffs. So if they, because they have so many new guys, yes, they're all veterans, and I know they all know how to play, but you're talking about a different team. So maybe you don't get that touch at the elbow like you used to. Maybe it's in a different location, but now you get an understanding, and they understand how important this is. LeBron being injured, hearing all of that, they're too old and not really talking about this. I mean, you're talking about the Lakers, but you know, you're saying the Nets first, and he feels like you're forgetting about them. So this is how they respond to that, getting everybody in, hosting this camp and saying, hey, when we get ready to go, we're kicking butt and taking names, if you know what I'm saying.
I'm just saying, it's in Las Vegas, so if media day, the pictures, they got some bags under their eyes, we'll know how much team bonding they actually did over the weekend.
They did it together.
They did it together. And look, whether or not the Lakers are old, they still have two top 10 players in the NBA, according to our NBA ranks. And here's what The Jump recommends for today on ESPN.com. NBA rank reveals their order of players 25 through 6. Final five revealed on Friday will not include the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic. We'll discuss that after the break. It's crunch time here on The Jump, and kick things off with the Chicago Bulls. They've exercised the fourth-year option on guard Coby White and third-year option on forward Patrick Williams. Vince, with all the new additions Chicago made this offseason, how important are the young Bulls to their team success?
Well, first and foremost, I'm never going to talk bad about my Carolina brother, Coby White, because that's first and foremost. But I think Coby first is a great pickup because he can score the ball. I know he was up and down and just had it tough, but here's, with all the attention on DeRozan, LaVine, and Lonzo, here's a guy that can go get his own bucket, he can make plays for others, and he can just flat out score. And then with Patrick Williams, I've been impressed with him because here's a guy who can defend, he can guard the best player, and you can allow LaVine and DeRozan to go out there and just do what they need to do, and he can shoot the ball and can play. So I think they're a great pickup to have great young pieces around that can run, jump, defend, and just play fast.
Zach, I know you like these Bulls.
Carolina Mafia.
Yes.
Yeah, Carolina Mafia in full effect here. Look, Coby White's a nice player, but to me, Patrick Williams, and I really like Patrick Williams.
I do.
Given all the draft picks they missed on, given all the draft picks they just traded for DeMar DeRozan and Nick Vucevic, Patrick Williams is one of the most important young players in the NBA, and I think he's going to be really good. But the Bulls long term are going to rise or fall. Is he all-star good, like perennial all-star good, or just really good rotation player good? They need him to hit his absolute ceiling, and I'm optimistic. I like what I saw from him as a rookie. He's still one of the youngest players in the NBA.
Yeah, and he looked like a man among boys in summer league this summer. He started all 71 games last season and made all rookie second team, so I expect him to make a big jump this season. Now, NBA rank continues this week on ESPN.com, and we now know all the way to number 6. Here's 10 through 6 guys. James Harden, Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, Lillard, MVP runner-up Joel Embiid at 7, and the reigning MVP Nikola Jokic at 6. Zach, that means Jokic in this ranking is behind Giannis, LeBron, Steph, Luka, and KD. I didn't say the exact order. You got to wait till tomorrow. But is 6 too low for the MVP?
Look, here's the rule. If you're gonna say someone's too low or they got snubbed, you gotta pick who comes out of the group that didn't get snubbed. So for me, if I'm taking those five guys, I gotta flip Jokic for Luka, because Luka hasn't won a playoff series yet, and that's no fault to him. He almost single-handedly beat the Clippers 2 years in a row. But Nikola Jokic is an MVP. What he's done in the playoffs, he deserves to be in that top five. And if I have to pick one, if I have to have the heartbreak of dragging one guy down a spot, I gotta pick Luka out of those other five.
I think we looked at the same notes. I agree. I mean, I think, you know, when you compare the guys, like, is he this? Is he that? Does he compare? I think the closest one could flip day to day would be Luka and Jokic, and they both have been playing great. I mean, when you talk about Giannis, when you talk about Steph, LeBron, KD, I mean, it's tough to say you're going to bounce one of those guys out. But there again, if you're five, if you're six, he's right there, and he'll always be right there in the top 10 for most of his career.
Okay. Like I said, 1 through 5 is coming out tomorrow. Quickly, Zach, who's your number one?
Kevin Durant, after what he did in the playoffs last season. But if I'm choosing between Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Giannis, I'll take any of them. I don't
you
care.
Take them all. I'm the same. I mean, I think, you know, there again, you could go KD, you can go LeBron. I watched KD and what he did at the Olympics. Right now, he's ready to take over the league.
But, you know, with Giannis, after what he did in the finals, is it fair to say that he's still, like, underrated? I mean, I still would go KD. But I feel like
it could go back and forth.
I feel like we have such a short memory. What he did in the finals was insane. I feel like I need to go watch that again.
Every week.
The Jump returns tomorrow. NFL Live is next.
They're all amazing. Thanks, guys.